Kirk, McCoy, Uhura, and Scotty are visiting a planet.
We believe what you say, Captain Kirk, but our position has not altered. The Halcon Council cannot permit your Federation to mine dilithium crystals on our planet.
We have shown the Council historical proof that our missions are peaceful.
We accept that your Federation is benevolent at present, but the future is always in question. Our dilithium crystals represent awesome power. Wrongful use of that power, even to the extent of the taking of one life, would violate our history of total peace. To prevent that, we would die, Captain, as a race, if necessary.
I admire your ethics.
And hope to prove ours.
Kirk to Enterprise.
Spock here.
Report on magnetic storm, Mr. Spock.
Standard ion type, Captain, but quite violent. And unpredictable.
Rough ride?
If we stay.
Stand by to beam up landing party.
Plot an extended orbit to clear disturbance. Kirk out.
Comply, Mr. Sulu.
Aye, sir.
When may we resume discussion?
The Council will meditate further, but do not be hopeful of any change. Captain, you do have the might to force the crystals from us, of course.
But we won't. Consider that. Enterprise. Transporter room, energize.
Kirk, Uhura, McCoy, and Scotty dematerialize. Spock comes into the transporter room.
Troublesome.
The landing party start to appear on the transporter pads, but the glittering matter streams won't stabilize. Outside, the ion storm rages. The Enterprise itself seems to become unstable, as if it were two ships orbiting in different directions. The landing party materialize, but their uniforms seem strange.
Spock was right, it was a rough room.
They stare as Spock and Kyle give them a Nazi-style salute. Spock has a short goatee beard, a fitted blue jacket, and a gold sash. They glance down at their own uniforms.
At norm, Mr. Kyle. Controls at neutral.
Yes, sir.
Status of mission, Captain.
Uhura, whose uniform sports a bare midriff, looks at McCoy. He quickly shushes her. Mystified but thinking fast, Kirk goes up to Spock.
No change.
Standard procedure, Captain.
Kirk nods, glancing down at the dagger Spock wears at his belt and the medals on his uniform. Spock goes to the transporter console.
Mr. Sulu, you program phaser barrage on Halcon cities.
Yes, Mr. Spock.
Your military capability, Captain?
None.
Regrettable that this society has chosen suicide. Mr. Kyle, you were instructed to compensate during the ion storm.
But I tried, Mr. Spock, I tried.
Carelessness with the equipment cannot be tolerated.
But Mr. Spock,
your
I tried.
Your agonizer.
No, Mr. Spock.
Your agonizer, please.
No, Mr. Spock. I tried, I really tried.
Kyle unclips a device from his belt and hands it to Spock, who presses it into Kyle's shoulder. He writhes in agony. Uhura turns away in horror, and Kirk has to stop himself from interfering. Kyle collapses on the floor. At his back on the wall is an emblem of a sword sticking through the poles of the planet Earth.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry, starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock and DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy. Mirror, Mirror, written by Jerome Bixby, directed by Mark Daniels.
Captain's log, stardate unknown. During an ion storm, my landing party is beamed back to the Enterprise and found it and the personnel aboard changed. The ship is subtly altered physically. Behavior and discipline has become brutal, savage.
Mr. Scott, the storm has caused some minor damage in your section. There are also injuries requiring your attention, Doctor. Well, gentlemen?
Mr. Spock?
Yes?
The power beam jumped for a moment, sir, just as the landing party was about to materialize. I never saw it happen before.
Due to your error, Mr. Kyle?
No, Mr. Spock. Before.
Possibly a result of the severe storm. Captain, do you feel any abnormal effects?
Yes. Dr. McCoy, you better look us over. That was a rough beam-up.
Yes, sir.
They go to the door.
Mr. Spock, have those transporter circuits checked.
In the corridor, a crewman salutes them.
What is all this?
How did we get in this?
Another crewman greets them, putting his fist on his heart, then extending his arm in salute. Kirk mirrors the gesture. Like the rest of the landing party, Kirk wears a gold sash at his waist. His jacket is a sleeveless gold wraparound decorated with medals. They make their way to the sick bay.
What is this? Everything's all messed up and changed around, out of place.
Captain, what's happened?
Oh, not everything. That spot. I spilled acid there a year ago. Jim, what in blazes is...
I don't know. It's our Enterprise. But it isn't. Maybe...
Maybe what, Captain?
Any of you feel dizzy when we were in the transporter beam?
Yes.
When we first materialized?
I did.
It happened twice. First, we were in our own transporter chamber, and then we faded. And then, when we finally materialized, we were here, wherever this is.
Captain, the transporter chief mentioned a surge of power. The transporter lock might have been affected by the ion storm, and we just materialized somewhere else.
Yes, here. Not our universe, not our ship. Something parallel. Parallel universe, coexisting with ours on another dimensional plane. Everything's duplicated. Almost. Another Enterprise, Spock with a beard.
Another Captain Kirk, another Dr. McCoy, and...
An exchange. Another... If we're here...
Then our counterparts must have been transporting up at the exact same time. Similar storms on both universes disrupted the circuits. We're here, and they're... on our Enterprise. Probably asking the same questions. Are we in another universe? And if so, how do we get back to our own?
They'll use the computer, and we have to.
What about the Hawkins?
We can't let them be destroyed. Scotty, can you buy me some time? Get below and short out the main phaser couplings. They'll think the storm blew the standby circuits.
Aye, sir.
Then get on this technology. It's all we have to work with if we want to get back home. The intercom may be monitored. Use your communicators for private messages. Subfrequency and scramble.
Aye, sir.
Lieutenant.
Yes, sir.
Get up to your post. Run today's communication from Starfleet Command. I want to know my exact orders and options, if any.
Yes, sir.
Bones.
Captain, I'm...
Kirk puts his hand on her shoulders.
Well, Laura, you're the only one who can do it. I'll be right there.
Yes, sir.
She goes.
Bones. Take a look at the library. We have a lot to learn.
On the bridge, Sulu is at the helm.
Mr. Chekhov, phaser setting for planetary target A.
Coordinate 712, stroke 4, Mr. Sulu.
Port batteries locked.
Lieutenant Uhura steps onto the bridge, quickly takes in the two armed guards at either side of the lift and the sword piercing the globe emblem on the doors, and goes to her station. Sulu, wearing a gold sash at his waist and sporting a huge scar down one side of his face, swaggers up to the gallery, perches on the communications console, and looks down at Uhura with a lascivious leer. He takes her chin in his hand.
Still no interest, Uhura? I could change your mind.
You are away from your post, mister.
Is the captain here? Is Spock here? When the cat's away...
Kirk comes onto the bridge. Chekhov at the con stands hurriedly, and everyone salutes. The captain returns the salute with a scowl. Sulu slopes back to the helm, and Kirk goes up to Uhura.
Communication status.
No storm damage, sir. All stations report normal. You ordered to annihilate the Halkins unless they comply. No alternative.
Kirk goes over to the command chair. It's more throne-like than the true Enterprise, with a higher backrest.
Phasers locked on target A, Captain. Approaching optimum range.
Kirk tries to hide any trace of anxiety.
Commence fire, Captain.
Sulu turns round.
Captain. Stand by, Mr. Sulu.
Scotty arrives at the main phaser power control room.
I've been ordered to check phaser couplings for a possible damage by the storm.
Do you have authorization from security, sir?
Captain's orders.
I'll have to check with Security Chief Sulu, sir.
Never mind. I'll attend to it.
The doors close on the security guard, and Scotty goes over to an intercom.
Kirk, yeah.
Phaser report, sir. No damage.
Very good, thank you, Mr. Scott. Kirk out.
The bearded Spock comes onto the bridge, glances at the view screen, and stands behind Sulu at the helm.
Planet's rotation is carrying primary target beyond arc of phaser lock.
Shall I correct orbit to new firing position?
No.
Lock on to secondary city.
Aye, sir. Lieutenant Uhura, contact the Halkin Council. I wish to talk to them again.
Yes, sir.
Captain? This is a new race. They offer other things of value besides dilithium crystals.
But it is clear that we cannot expect their cooperation. They've refused the Empire. Command procedure dictates that we provide the customary example.
Secondary target now moving beyond our phaser lock.
Put phasers on standby, Mr. Sulu.
A serious breach of orders, Captain.
I have my reasons. And I'll make them clear to you. In my own good time.
Captain, I have the leader of the Halkin Council waiting on Channel B.
It is useless to resist us.
We do not resist you.
You have 12 hours to consider your position.
12 years, Captain Kirk, or 12,000. We are ethically compelled to deny your demand for our dilithium crystals, for you would use their power to destroy.
We will level your planet and take what we want. That is destruction. You will die as a race.
To preserve what we are.
We will not argue. 12 hours, no more. Close communications. Turn phasers off.
Aye, sir.
12 hours, Captain. That is unprecedented.
I shall be in my quarters. Lieutenant Uhura, have Dr. McCoy and Mr. Scott meet me there.
Uhura looks at him anxiously. He shakes his head. With a sly look back at the captain, Chekov presses a pair of buttons on his navigation console, leaves his post, and goes to the lift.
Captain, you placed yourself in a most grave position. This conduct must be reported.
You're at liberty to do so, Mr. Spock.
Spock turns gravely away as Kirk steps into the lift. Chekov won't look his captain in the eye.
Deck 5, sir.
Kirk nods and Chekov gives him a malign glance. As Kirk steps from the lift, someone hits him in the face. Two crewmen in brown overalls pin Kirk's arms. Chekov draws his phaser.
So you die, Captain. And we all move up in rank. No one will question the assassination of a captain who has disobeyed prime orders of the Empire.
Chekov's face breaks into an evil grin.
Captain's log supplemental. I command an Enterprise where officers apparently employ private henchmen among the crew, where assassination of superiors is a common means of advancing in rank.
A loyal crewman attacks Chekov. He kills one of the men holding Kirk. Kirk beats off the second man, and the loyal crewman kills him too. More guards arrive.
Your men, Captain.
Easy, Farrell. I did your job. Ask the captain.
Sir?
Yes, he did your job.
Smart boy. Switching to the top dog.
Get him out of here.
Mr. Chekov is going to make me a chief, sir. You could make me an officer.
All right. You're working for me.
A commission?
You're in line. You might even make captain.
Yes, sir.
Kirk knocks him down.
Not on my ship.
The booth for this one, sir?
Yes, the booth. Carry on.
The two personal bodyguards in blue overalls drag Chekov away. Later, Kirk comes into his quarters with McCoy and Scotty.
Here, what's this?
It's called blood. Watch your step. The officers move up by assassination. Chekhov tried it on me.
Mr. Sulu is security chief, like the ancient Gestapo.
My sick bay is a chamber of horrors. Two of my assistants were betting on the tolerance of an injured man, how long it would take him to pass out from the pain.
Report on technology.
Mostly variations in instrumentation. Nothing I can't handle.
Star readings?
Everything's exactly where it should be, except us.
Let's find out where we stand.
He sits at his desk.
Computer.
Ready.
This is the captain. Record security research to be classified under my voice print or Mr. Scott's.
Recorded.
Produce all data relevant to the recent ion storm. Correlate following hypothesis. Could a storm of such magnitude cause a power surge in the transporter circuits, creating a momentary interdimensional contact with a parallel universe?
Affirmative.
At such a moment, could persons in each universe, in the act of beaming, transpose with their counterparts in the other universe?
Affirmative.
Could conditions necessary to such an event be created artificially using the ship's power?
Affirmative.
Kirk slots a data file into the computer.
Record procedure.
He gives the data file to Scotty.
Scotty, can you do it?
Not by myself. I'll need help. You'd be too conspicuous.
McCoy, deep in thought, finds them both staring at him.
I'm a doctor, not an engineer.
No, you're an engineer. I'll have to tap the power we need from the warp engines and balance it for the four of us.
Jim, the way this ship is run, what kind of people are we in this universe?
Let's find out. Computer.
Ready.
Read out official record of current command.
Captain James T. Kirk succeeded to command ISS Enterprise through assassination of Captain Christopher Pike. First action, suppression of Gorlan uprising through destruction of rebel home planet. Second action, execution of 5,000 colonists on Vega 9.
Cancel. Now we know.
Captain, we can do it.
Good.
We have to lay in the automatic transporter setting. But when we interrupt engine circuits to tie the power increase into the transporter, it'll show up on Sulu's security board. Of course, we'll only need a second.
I'll tell Uhura to create a diversion, distract Sulu's attention. At your signal, we better get back to our posts. Keep me advised.
Jim, if we're here, what do you suppose our counterparts are doing back in our universe?
On our Enterprise.
I order you! Let me go!
On the true Enterprise, two security guards drag Kirk to the brig.
Invaders! Spock! Get these men off me!
What is that, Spock?
You traitorous pig. I'll hang you up by your Vulcan ears. I'll have you all executed.
I think not. Your authority on this ship is extremely limited, Captain. The four of you will remain here in the brig and in custody until I discover how to return you to wherever it is you belong.
Has the whole galaxy gone crazy? What kind of a uniform is this? Where's your beard? What's going on? Where's my personal guard?
I can answer none of your questions at this time.
All right, Spock. Whatever your game is, I'll play it. You want credits, I'll give them to you. You'll be a rich man. A commander of your own? I can swing that, too.
Apparently, some kind of transposition has taken place. I find it extremely interesting.
Spock, what is it that will buy you? Power?
Fascinating.
Power, Spock! I can get that for you!
On the Mirror Enterprise, Spock comes up to Kirk in a corridor.
Captain, I am pleased that you frustrated Mr. Chekhov's plan. I should regret your death.
Why?
I do not desire the captaincy. I much prefer my scientific duties, and I am frankly content to be a lesser target.
Logical, as always, Mr. Spock.
Kirk sees Chekhov in a tubular booth, writhing in pain.
The agony booth is a most effective means of discipline.
Kirk takes a closer look.
I presume you've ordered full duration?
I haven't decided.
Indeed.
His act warrants death.
I said I haven't decided.
That is, of course, your affair. Captain, may I inquire if you intend to persist in your unusual course of action regarding the Halkins?
You heard my orders.
They are, of course, in contradiction to standard Empire procedure. You cannot ignore the consequences.
Is that a threat?
I do not threaten, Captain. I merely state facts. I have found you to be an excellent officer. Our missions together have been both successful and profitable. However, I shall not permit your aberrations to jeopardize my position.
Kirk moves on, scratching his chin.
Spock, do you think we should destroy the Hawkins?
Terror must be maintained or the Empire is doomed. It is the logic of history.
Conquest is easy, control is not. We may have bitten off more than we can chew.
Captain, I do not wish to find myself opposing you. If you continue on your present course, this confusing, inexplicable behavior...
is my concern, not yours. You would find me a formidable enemy.
I'm aware of that, Captain. I trust that you are aware of the reverse.
He goes with his personal guard. Kirk's burly bodyguard, Farrell, comes up to his captain.
Order, sir.
Release Chekhov. Confine him to quarters.
Yes, sir.
The guard looks at Kirk in surprise, but salutes and goes. At the door of the emergency manual monitor deck of the engineering section, Scotty distracts the guard while McCoy drugs him.
I'll hold him for about 6 hours.
He follows Scotty up the ladder to a gallery overlooking the engineering section, but separated off from it by a mesh screen. Stealthily, Scotty starts turning off or overriding parts of the system. Below, the engineers in their red overalls go about their business unaware. Kirk comes up to the door of his quarters. A guard salutes and opens the door for him. A dark-haired woman in a blue uniform that leaves her midriff bare is lying on his bed.
I fell asleep. We had quite a time in the chem lab picking up after the storm.
She gets up, presses a button on a device set into the wall, opens the microwave-sized food synthesizer, and removes two cocktails.
Nothing compared to your day, I gather. I heard about Chekhov.
He gambled, I won.
You got lucky. I'm surprised that you could be caught off guard that way.
I was preoccupied.
You're still in trouble with Starfleet Command. What you've got in mind this time is beyond me. You're scheming, of course. The Hawkins have something you want. Or is it all some clever means to advance you to the Admiralty? Kirk, the cabinet itself?
Further than that, if I'm successful.
Really? Well, you must know what you're doing. You always do. If I'm to be the woman of a Caesar, can't I know what you're up to?
She twines her arms around his neck and kisses him. Hearing the whistle of the intercom, Kirk breaks from her, raises his glass in an ironic toast, and goes and sits down at the viewscreen on his desk.
Kirk here.
Mr. Spock, Captain.
Yes.
I have received a private communication from Starfleet Command. I am committing a breach of regulations by informing you of its contents.
Yes, Mr. Spock.
I am instructed to wait until planet dawn over principal target to permit you to carry out our mission.
And if I don't?
In that event, I am ordered to kill you and to proceed against the Halkins as the new captain of the Enterprise.
Captain's log, stardate unknown. We are trapped in a savage parallel universe from which we must escape within 4 hours, or I will face a death sentence at Mr. Spock's hands.
Let's drink a toast to Spock. The only man aboard with the decency to warn you, and he'll die for it. You'll never find another man like him.
I don't intend to kill him.
Are you going to act against the Hulkins before the deadline?
No, but I'll avoid killing Spock.
Just get him out of the way, he and his men.
I'll get out of his way.
Shall I activate the Tantalus field? You'll at least want to monitor him, won't you?
Kirk bluffs.
Yes.
The slim, young, dark-eyed woman crosses to a panel on the wall. It slides up to reveal a small monitor screen.
I hate this thing.
There are several dials and controls and one large blue button.
It's not that bad.
Of course not. It made you captain. How many enemies have you simply wiped out of existence by the touch of a button? 50? 100? Now, I always thought that was funny. The great, powerful Captain Kirk, who owes everything to some unknown alien scientist and a plundered laboratory.
Well, if you don't take advantage of your opportunities...
You don't rise to the command of a starship. Or even higher.
She turns the monitor on. An image of the bearded Spock appears, sitting at the computer in his quarters.
That magnificent mind of his. But it can't protect him from this. I press it, and he dies. Now?
Kirk grabs her wrist, his eyes burning, pulls her hand away from the blue button, and switches off the screen.
You really mean it? It doesn't matter. If Spock fails his order, he'll be killed anyway.
I'll see to it that the circumstances of his failure will clear him.
She turns to him, puzzled.
You're not even afraid of Starfleet Command. Can your scheme bring you that much power so quickly? And what about me? How does Marlena fit in?
Kirk gazes into her eyes and strokes her long black hair.
How does Marlena want to fit in?
She goes to the door, sipping her drink.
Scotty here, sir.
We have to get out of here within 3 hours. Spock has orders to kill me unless I complete the military mission.
We've got another deadline, too, sir.
Explain.
The two-way matter transmission affected the local field density between the universes, and it's increasing. We've got to move fast.
How fast?
Half hour at the most.
If we miss?
We couldn't get out of here in a century. No. We're ready to bridge power from the engines to the transporter. You've got to get down there and free the board so we can lock in. Now, give me about 10 minutes. I've got to complete a few more computations.
All right. I'll be in the transporter room in 10 minutes. I'll meet you in the sick bay afterward.
Aye, sir.
In Spock's quarters.
Computer.
Ready.
Explain computer activity in the engineering section.
Our security research is in progress.
Who is conducting the research?
Our captain and Mr. Scott.
Spock raises an eyebrow.
What is the nature of the research?
Program is classified under voice index lock.
As Spock turns off the computer, a light begins flashing on its control panel. He opens a comms channel to the helm.
Why are you monitoring my communications, Mr. Sulu?
My security board has detected extensive use of computer, Mr. Spock. I was about to inform you.
It's not hard to guess the nature of your order from Starfleet Command. I suggest a connection. The captain suspects.
He's working on escape or defense.
That is my concern.
Correct. It's your play. I hope you succeed. Because the order would fall on me next. And you know how Captain Kirk's enemies have a habit of disappearing.
If I am successful, you see yourself a step nearer to the captaincy. I do not want to command the Enterprise. But if it should befall me, I suggest you remember that my operatives would avenge my death. And some of them are Vulcans.
Sulu's hooded eyes become wary. The door to Kirk's quarters open, and Marlena stands there in a colorful, flimsy, see-through gown.
Oiling my traps, darling.
She floats into the room.
I'm afraid I'm a little out of practice. Maybe that's what happened to us, huh? It's very hard for a working officer to shine as a woman every minute. And you demand perfection.
I've never seen perfection. But no woman could come closer to it.
I remember when you used to talk that way.
She sits on the bed. Kirk smiles sympathetically and moves towards her.
I still do.
Prove it.
He sits beside her, but shakes his head with regret.
I've got to go.
Ship's business. An important task on the crew deck.
Kirk walks away. Marlena gathers the flimsy material of her dress around her body.
Well, I guess it's over. Commander Kenner will take me temporarily. He's made that quite clear. I'll call a yeoman to help me with my things.
You don't have to do that.
She turns.
Are you feeling sorry for me?
And goes up to him.
Do I see hesitation in your eyes? About anything? I want one thing, Captain. Transfer me. On the Enterprise, I am humiliated. On another ship, I can hunt fresh game. I've got my rank. Don't I?
Kirk nods.
I've been a captain's woman and I like it. I'll be one again if I have to go through every officer in the fleet.
You could?
She goes to slap him. He grabs her wrist.
I simply meant that you could be anything you want to be.
Her dark eyes look up into his with surprise and a sudden, urgent longing. Her lips part. He draws her to him, and they kiss, passionately.
It's been a long time since you've kissed me like that. You're a stranger. Mercy to the Hawkins. Mercy to Spock. To me.
She looks down for a moment.
Am I your woman?
Their eyes meet.
You're the captain's woman, until he says you're not.
He releases her, goes to the door, turns back for a moment, and leaves. Marlena frowns, puzzled. She goes over to the panel, hiding the secret monitor with its deadly blue button. She watches Kirk walk down the corridor into the lift. Her eyes narrow.
Uhura.
Uhura takes out her communicator.
Yes, Captain.
Scotty's signal should be coming through any moment now. You know what to do.
I've got a pretty good idea, sir.
Keep Sulu's attention off that board.
I'll do my best, sir.
Good luck. Kirk out.
In an access tunnel, Scotty prepares to divert engine circuit power into the transporter. He opens his communicator. Uhura hears the signal, removes her earpiece, and drifts seductively over to the scar-faced Sulu at the helm.
You aren't very persistent, Mr. Sulu. The game has rules. You're ignoring them. I protest, and you come back. You didn't come back.
He grabs her.
Now you're making sense.
I was getting bored. Of course, this isn't the time.
Any time's a good time.
She untwines herself and slaps him.
I'm afraid I changed my mind again.
You take a lot of chances, Lieutenant.
So do you, mister. So do you.
She pulls a knife from her thigh-length black boots and backs slowly up to the lift, where an officer stands alongside the two security guards.
Take over for me.
She sheathes the knife and, with a last scornful look at Sulu, steps into the lift.
Mr. Scott, all clear. On my way to sickbay.
Now it's up to the captain.
Spock finds Kirk in the transporter room.
You'll please restrict your movements, Captain.
He points his phaser at Kirk, comes over to where he's working on the console, and takes his weapon.
What are you doing?
Are you going to shoot me now, Spock? I thought I had until dawn.
I shall make that decision. Since your return from the planet, you've behaved in a most atypical and illogical manner. I want to know why.
Shoot, you're wasting time.
I shall not waste time with you. You're too inflexible, too disciplined once you've made up your mind. But Dr. McCoy has a plenitude of human weaknesses. Sentimental, soft. You may not tell me what I want to know, but he will.
You're running a big risk, Spock.
I have the phaser, Captain. And I do not intend to simply disappear, as so many of your opponents have in the past. If you please. Sickbay.
McCoy, Scotty, and Uhura are waiting in sickbay. The door opens.
Yes, of course. The entire landing party. Captain, stand over there. Doctor, it is time for answers.
Kirk spins round and thumps Spock on the jaw. They all rush at Spock, but he fights them off. Spock and Kirk struggle. He throws the captain over the diagnostic table. Uhura and McCoy join the fight. Spock throws them both off. Kirk headbutts Spock. Spock knocks him to the floor. McCoy and Scotty try to hold Spock down, but he throws them off. Kirk poleaxes Spock with a huge skull from McCoy's precious collection. He helps Scotty up.
How much time, Scotty? Oh, hardly 15 minutes, sir. The field density between the two universes is starting to close very fast.
Help me get him on the table.
Well, come on, help me get him on the table. He'll die without immediate treatment.
They help him to the biobed, unaware that Marlena is watching and listening to their every move from the monitor in Kirk's quarters.
Everything laid in, Scotty? The time lag so the operator can get into the transporter chamber?
All laid in, sir. Come on, McCoy. You're taking a chance on not getting back home.
We'll get home. This won't take long.
14 minutes, we've got to go.
Will you shut up? I just saved his life.
You want me to stop, Jim? Only take a minute. He is very much like our own Mr. Spock, isn't he? You've got that minute.
A little time he'll live.
Sulu and three red-shirted guards, all armed, march into sickbay. Sulu pulls a dagger from his belt.
What is this, Mr. Sulu? Mr. Spock has orders to kill you, Captain. He will succeed. Apparently. You will also appear to have killed him after a fierce battle. Regrettable, but it will leave me in command.
Kirk prepares to defend himself from Sulu's knife. One of Sulu's guards vanishes in a flash of blue light. In Kirk's cabin, Marlena presses the blue button. The second and third guards vanish, leaving Sulu alone. Marlena switches off the monitor. The captain advances on Sulu warily, then moves so the biobed is between them. He grabs Sulu's knife arm, karate chops it, then karate chops Sulu on the neck.
Captain, we barely got 10 minutes.
Let's go, Bones.
I can't let him die, Joe. Look, you get out of the transporter room, make sure it's clear. I'll be there in 5 minutes.
No longer.
I guarantee it. Go on, please.
Kirk, Uhura, and Scotty hurry away. McCoy injects Spock with the hypo spray. He checks the bio screen. Spock's eyes open. The bearded Vulcan sits up and seizes McCoy by the wrist.
Why did the captain let me live?
McCoy tries to pull free, but Spock grasps his wrist even harder. He backs away. Spock keeps hold of him, following until McCoy is backed up against a wall. Spock slowly reaches out his other hand and puts his fingertips to McCoy's head.
Our minds are merging, Doctor. Our minds are one. I feel what you feel. I know what you know.
In the transporter room, Marlena waits with a gun hidden behind her back. Kirk holds Scotty off.
A friend. Activate the transporter. You saved us back at the sick bay over the Tantalus field.
Take me with you.
I can't. I'm sorry, our power is balanced for four. There's no guarantee that we'll make it. With five, all could die. Scotty.
It's working, sir.
But there are only three of you.
One is coming.
He goes to the controls.
I'd help if I could, Marlena. Believe that.
Marlena points the gun at Kirk and Scotty. Kirk looks up and calmly steps out from behind the console.
If you kill us, you'll still stay.
Uhura grabs Marlena's wrist from behind, takes her phaser, points it at her, and removes Marlena's knife from her thigh-length boots.
Where's McCoy?
Kirk looks out into the corridor.
Time, Scotty. 5 minutes, sir.
Do you know what they'll do to me?
The power's cut, sir. They're onto us. Auxiliary.
It's available.
Can you bridge to your setup?
Oh, I can get us the power, but the automatic setting is linked to the transporter main. If we bypass, it means that someone has got to operate the controls manually.
One of us will have to stay.
I'll stay, Captain.
Get to the transporter chamber. You too, Uhura.
Jim!
That's an order, Scotty.
Kirk stays at the controls.
Aye, Captain.
Marlena comes over to him.
What about me?
McCoy.
Spock pushes McCoy into the transporter room.
I cut the transporter power. It was necessary to delay your beam out until I could arrive.
He hands McCoy over to Scotty and goes over to take control of the console.
Engineering, reactivate main transporter circuits.
The console lights come back on.
You're a man of integrity in both universes, Mr. Spock.
You must return to your universe. I must have my captain back. I shall operate the transporter. You have 2 minutes and 10 seconds.
For that time, I have something to say. How long before the Hulkan prediction of galactic revolt is realized?
Approximately 240 years.
The inevitable outcome?
The Empire shall be overthrown, of course.
The illogic of waste, Mr. Spock. The waste of lives, potential, resources, time. I submit to you that your Empire is illogical because it cannot endure. I submit that you are illogical to be a willing part of it.
You have 1 minute and 23 seconds.
If change is inevitable, predictable, beneficial, doesn't logic demand that you be a part of it?
One man cannot summon the future.
But one man can change the present. Be the captain of this enterprise, Mr. Spock. Find a logical reason for sparing the Hulkans and make it stick. Push till it gives. You can defend yourself better than any man in the fleet.
Captain, get in the chamber!
Kirk glances from Marlena to Spock.
What about it, Spock?
A man must also have the power.
In my cabin is a device that will make you invincible.
Indeed.
What will it be? Past or future? Tyranny or freedom? It's up to you.
Kirk turns to Marlena, briefly lays his hand over hers, then steps up onto the transporter chamber with McCoy, Scotty, and Uhura.
It is time.
In every revolution, there's one man with a vision.
Captain Kirk, I shall consider it.
In the transporter room of the True Enterprise, Kyle smiles with relief. Spock watches anxiously. Kirk gets off the transporter pad and steps gratefully across to his clean-shaven first officer.
Spock. Welcome home, Captain.
Later, on the bridge.
What I don't understand is how you were able to identify our counterpart so quickly.
It was far easier for you as civilized men to behave like barbarians than it was for them as barbarians to behave like civilized men. I assume they returned to their Enterprise at the same time you appeared here.
Probably. However, that Jim Kirk will find a few changes, if I read my Spocks correctly.
Jim, I think I liked him with a beard better. Gave him character. Of course, almost any change would be a distinct improvement.
What worries me is the easy way his counterpart fitted into that other universe. I always thought Spock was a bit of a pirate at heart.
Indeed, gentlemen. May I point out that I had an opportunity to observe your counterparts here quite closely. They were brutal, savage, unprincipled, uncivilized, treacherous. In every way, splendid examples of Homo sapiens, the very flower of humanity. I found them quite refreshing.
Kirk glances at McCoy.
I'm not sure, but I think we've been insulted.
I'm sure.
A slim, young, dark-haired lieutenant comes over to Kirk with a report pad. Scotty and McCoy stare.
Captain Kirk.
Kirk glances up, and he, too, stares.
Lieutenant...
Marlena Moreau. I was just assigned last week.
Kirk nods and smiles.
All right, Lieutenant, carry on.
She goes to speak to an engineering officer.
You've met her before, Captain?
Why do you ask?
Your reaction. One of recognition?
Oh, no. We haven't met before. Exactly. She just seemed a nice, likable girl. I think we could become friends. It's possible.
Spock raises a suspicious eyebrow as Kirk gets up and goes over to talk to the attractive new lieutenant. Audio description by IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.